Hello, everybody. It's Thea Mapoko here. We are talking this month about something that I think is the big topic, really. The very heart of business. Before I tell you the title of this month's talk, I just say that this topic is actually, I don't know whether to say it's back by popular demand or because we've never covered it as an episode before, but it's a topic that I've covered as a bonus in the past. But today people have, over the past few months, I've been looking at the number of questions that people have asked me, and I realize that this is the area that no matter how often we revisit it, I still feel that we could never cover it enough because it's the heart of the business, it affects everything about our business. So let me tell you what the title is today. The title is Negotiating, Doing Business, and Selling at the Top. Negotiating, doing business, and selling at the top. So, that's what we're talking about today. One of the things that I've learned, when I first got into business, like a lot of people, obviously the first thing you want to learn is how to sell. Because you're the first one, you probably have a few employees. In some cases, you don't have employees. When I started, I think I had my very first business. I had about three people working with me. So I had a founding team at the time. But sales, I remember, because it was my first job as a CEO, and I did a pretty lousy job. Sales was one of those things that were always delegated to somebody else because nobody wanted to take responsibility. Nobody wanted to get rejected, especially the CEO. I used to sit behind my desk and I want my staff to go out there and sell. Of course, we failed. That business lost. But that's not the reason we failed. Just for the record, I don't want to. We failed because we made certain big mistakes. We were undercapitalized. It was an expensive venture, and we just never raised enough money. As much as we raised probably a few million, but it was still short of what we needed. And it was at the beginning of the recession, sadly. But this lesson on selling is something that I took away from that because, when I moved on to start another venture. On my own this time, I remember thinking I've got to figure this selling thing out, And a lot of people, even those who are called salespeople, this is something that they find to be quite challenging. So, what have I learned about selling? Firstly, two things. The first thing is that there are two types of selling. There's the old school, like if you read the old books, from some of the sales gurus like Zig Ziglar, who's an amazing, amazing teacher and an amazing speaker. That crowd of sales teachers or sales gurus or sales, I don't know what to say, but yeah, sales gurus, I suppose, is the word. They taught a certain type of selling. Look, I don't think the world has changed that much, but I've also discovered that I couldn't sell using those old models, always be closing and all of that stuff. And I think it works, but it didn't work for me. So I'm gonna teach you the stuff that I've found. And I think also it depends what kind of business you're running, because someone like me, who's most of my clients are senior executives. I sell to big corporations. I can't just be coming with some pushy tactics, of a lousy pushy salesman. I have to approach this process with a great deal of respect. And when I'm sitting in the boardroom, talk business, not just come and just sell and sell and sell. So I think there are two types. The one type works for probably certain people and for a certain market, and it just never worked for me. My type works for me, and it works for a lot of my clients, and it works especially when you deal with the high level sales, when you deal with executives, when you deal with big corporations, et cetera, et cetera. So there's what I call the average salesman. The guy who sells low-end products and, who just has to go out and knocking on doors and selling and selling and selling. Their focus tends to be closing a sale. They've got one thing on their mind. I gotta go close. I gotta go close that sale. But another group of salespeople, the people I call business people, top class, wealthy salespeople, they do it differently because they do business. And that's what I call superior selling. And they negotiate. They do business and they negotiate. They sit in boardrooms, no pressure there. It's all about the vision and the big picture. But I'll get into all of those details. So, what are the differences? Let's start with the differences, according to me. The difference is the first one is that I call this one lower level selling and superior selling. Obviously, you can see where I'm going with this. Where I'm going with this is I want to teach you what I call superior selling, because that's the one thing I think I've mastered over the years. And that's the thing I use on a daily basis. I never feel like a salesman. I'm always a businessman. I always negotiate big deals and stuff like that. So low-level selling is usually conducted by an average salesman. And I'm saying this in inverted commas, and I'm saying this respectfully. I'm not dissing anybody. I'm saying this with a great deal of respect, but I also want to make the differentiation here. Average salesman. Secondly, if you contrast low-level selling with superior selling is conducted by a business person. I could have said a salesperson there. When I say salesmen, I'm not saying women are not salespeople. So perhaps I should have written salespeople. From a perspective of the client, the lower level selling person is seen as inferior. It's seen as an inferior adversary, because it's almost like you're begging for the sale. Oh, please, can we do business? I mean, I get these people who call me, guys who want to sell me advertising and, begging, what I mean? Saying, man, please, can you buy from me? If you don't buy, I'm not going to eat this month. I mean, can you imagine? For me as a client, as a potential customer, I'm thinking, dude, but that's not my job to feed you. Give me value. Sell me something that's good for me. Not because you've got needs of your own. So this kind of a salesperson is seen as an inferior adversary. Adversary is like an enemy, but it's a very light word for it's like an opposition. You're inferior, but you're an annoyance, if you like. They're seen as an annoyance. Yeah, I think that's the word. But on the other hand, on the superior selling side, people see you as an equal associate. You're a business associate. You are here to talk business. They see you as an equal, not inferior. And then from the lower level selling side, here's another difference. It's all about pressure. Close, go close, man, go close, It's all about pressure, pressure, pressure selling, closing deals. On the other side, no pressure. No pressure to close, no, none of that. It's vision-based collaborative or collaboration selling. So we're sitting across the table from each other. We're looking at the vision of where the company is going, what the outcomes, how, what the bigger future looks like. And we are collaborating, to say, we're working together on this, as much as I'm here to sell something, but it's not about me, it's about them. you know, and they will work with me here. You know, they don't feel pressured, none of that. You know, because we somehow we think that when we pressure people, things happen faster. Actually, they probably happen, they take long time. But when you collaborate and with a vision that is clear, you find that things actually happen a lot faster. So, what is the focus of the lower level salesman? His focus is, I need this deal. I need the money. Everything is just all about me. You know, it's all about him. You know, hey man, I need this deal. I really, really need this deal. I need the money, man. It's month end, it's here, etc., etc. On the other hand, on the superior side of selling, the focus is to help the client see and decide that doing business with me is the best thing they can do to advance their own interests. To advance their, it's about them. I don't know if you can see that. It's all about, I need the deal, I need the money, it's all about me, it's all about them. I'm here to help the client see and decide that doing business with me is the best thing they can do to advance their own interests, not mine, theirs. It's all about them. Here's another difference, and I call this one clarity of impact. When the sale is done, there'll be an impact somewhere. The lower level salesman is thinking, I'm very clear why this sale is good for me, and I'm ready to present and push them for a close. I'm very clear why this sale is good for me, and I'm ready to present. He wants to do, he's eager, he's got this presentation. He just wants to go in and do the presentation and push them for a close. The superior salesperson is thinking, I'm very clear why this product or service and the long-term relationship with me is good for them, and I have the right questions to help them clarify their vision and come to one conclusion that doing business with me is the best thing they can do today. It's about them. You know, I'm very clear why this product or service and the long-term relationship with me is good for them. And I have the right questions. He's got questions. He's not saying, I can't wait to present and present my stuff. He's got questions. I've got questions to help them clarify their vision. It's all about them, their vision, and come to one conclusion that doing business with me is the best thing they can do today. For who? For themselves. So, I hope you see the difference here. Of course you do, because it's obvious. Here's another thing. A true decision to buy is an emotional, you've heard this, that people buy with emotion and they justify with logic. Emotion, then justify with logic. Because my married friends always tell, of course I know this myself because I've got a girlfriend. They always talk about, you know, their wives who get all excited, they buy shoes, or the wives themselves know this. They would buy the shoes and then they would have to come up with, you know, with a logical explanation. But they were emotional. They just loved this beautiful. Why shouldn't they? I mean, shoes are beautiful, right? I mean, why shouldn't they? So a true decision to buy is an emotional decision based on a vision that can be justified by logic. But here's what I want to highlight here, is the vision. When people don't have a vision of where this is going, of what the future looks like, or how the future will be better after they buy or after they make a decision, they won't make a decision. So you could push and pressure them. They won't be happy to be pressured to buy if their vision is not yet clear. How their lives will improve, how their lives will be better off because of the decision or as a result of buying. So, here's a quote for you from one of the top, the best guys in sales training in the world today. His name is Jeffrey Gitomo. I would recommend his books highly, highly. One of the books that I have that I treasure is called Sales Bible. He has a quote from Jeffrey. He says, "Everybody wants to close the sale. You want to close the sale. Your manager wants you to close the sale. Your manager's boss wants you to close the sale. Your CEO wants you to close the sale. Your accounting department wants you to close the sale. Everybody wants you to close the sale, except the customer. They don't want to be closed. They hate salespeople that try to close. Customers want to buy. You know my mantra, people don't like to be sold, but they love to buy." I included this quote because this mantra, I think I copied this mantra in my book, I could be wrong, in The Best Advice I Ever Got. I quoted him about two times in that book because I agree with this philosophy. People don't like to be sold, but they love to buy. You know this. I know this. I mean, when we've got a bit of pocket money in the pockets, we want to go spend it, man. But we don't sit there and say, "Ah, I wish a salesman could knock at my door so I could spend the money." No, no. You know? So people love to buy, but they don't like to be sold. So looking at the superior selling process, I want to start by giving you a bit of structure here. Because I'm going to cover a lot of stuff, so I don't want you to get lost. There are three key parts, and these are not things I made up. This is not my own creation. In fact, there is a process. In fact, a lot of, especially in people who sell through direct mail, they always tell you, pain, find the pain, agitate the pain, and solve the pain. Pain, find the pain, basically. Agitate means make them feel the pain. Make, you know, someone would say twist the knife. I mean, that sounds a bit, you know, if somebody has a pain, imagine you go to a doctor, you've got an injury, and the doctor puts the knife in your wound and they twist it. Of course, that's a cruel doctor. But in the case of selling, you want to make them, because sometimes people, when they don't see the danger that they're facing, they won't make a decision. So you want to agitate the pain, make them really see, you know, but you don't want to manipulate them. You want them to really see why they need to do something, and you are here to solve it. So now I'm going to, before we break it, we go into the steps, I want to give you the principles of superior selling. You know, these are the principles I live by, and I'm hoping that they'll help you too, or some of them will help you. There are 12 of them that I'm covering here. The first one is, you must never be needy. I don't know if you remember, last month's episode, on the 7 secret principles with the rejection theory, it was addressing the issue of need. Today, because we're talking sales, there's going to be a lot of that. So if you've forgotten about last month, episode, go back, listen to it, and and it ties in, I suppose, with a lot of what we're going to be covering here today. But now, let's get cracking on. Here's the first principle. The first principle is you must never be needy. Yes, you want the deal, but never be needy. 2, your neediness is your greatest weakness. Your neediness is your greatest weakness. Your neediness is your greatest weakness in business. Sorry, I'm reading that badly. Your neediness is your, you know when you're trying to read something but your mind is getting a bit distracted by something else? That's what just happened here. I'm trying to read but my mind is on something that I'm seeing in my office. So sorry about that. I just got a bit distracted by something. But I'm back now focusing. Your neediness is your greatest weakness in business negotiations. You lose control and make bad decisions. When you are needy, you are in trouble. Seriously, you are in serious trouble. You must focus on and highlight the genuine need of your prospect. They are needy, not you. If anybody has to be needy in a business negotiation, this is what you need to remember, not you. Make them needy. Make your prospect needy, not you. You must become collected, relaxed. Yeah, sure, you want the deal. Of course because you want the deal badly. I'm saying, yeah, sure, you want the deal as if, oh, yeah, yeah, well, you want the deal badly, but you are not needy. Your job is to make them needy. Again, to the extent that it's in their best interest. You don't want to make people needy for something they don't need. I mean, that's not fair. Give them a right to say no, a right to veto. That's what it's called in negotiations. Give them a right to say no right from the beginning. Right from the beginning, give them a right to say no, and I'll explain what I mean by that. Never be desperate and put pressure to close. When you try to close, when you try too hard to close, always be closing. Let's close this deal, let's close this deal. And it's not yet time for the deal to be closed. And I'm using this in inverted commas. It shows that you are needy. It betrays your neediness, and it's not a good thing. Never be desperate to hear the word yes. Don't get too excited when you hear the word yes early in the meeting. Don't get too excited by an early yes. Instead, challenge it, and I'll teach you how to challenge it. It can induce your need. You know, when someone says yes, let's do the deal, and then you get up and you say, oh, thank you for the deal, bye, and you go, and then they call you the next day saying, hey man, sorry, we realize we only have 50% of the budget, because now you are already all committed and excited. What are you gonna do? You will compromise. You'll say, because now you already want the deal, you know, or they pull out of the deal and you'll end up saying, okay, can I give it to you at a discount? You become desperate. You don't want that. So you must always be careful not to be too excited about an early yes, because it could be a trick. They could be tricking you. People who have been doing big business negotiations, they know these tricks. You know, get the other guy too excited, get him needy, and then take it away. What is he going to do? He's going to start compromising. It can be very dangerous to be needy. Never leave a meeting with a maybe. When someone says maybe, yeah, maybe, never, never. Get a no, get a yes. Get a no, get a yes, not a maybe. Get a yes, maybe is not a decision. It's worthless, it's a waste of your time. Some of the best deals start with no. Some of the best deals start with no. Only yes and no are real decision. Maybe is not a decision. No creates clarity. Whoever says no needs to own their decision and give a valid explanation when it is requested. No is the start of a real negotiation, not the end. When someone says no, don't be scared. Ask them why. Ask them why. Why would they say no? You know, and it's a good thing when they say no, because what it does, it's giving you an opportunity now to deal with whatever issue they have, whatever reason they advance, you know, and it gives you another chance to show them the danger that they're facing. An early yes can be a danger for you. A no can be a danger for them, provided that you are able to show them. Provided, of course, that they have money. Hey, they could say no because they can't afford it. In which case, you can help them. But if they've got money in the bank and they say no, yours is to really show them. And I'll teach you. Fear of rejection is nothing but a sign of neediness. Deal with it first and eliminate all neediness before you even go to the meeting. Don't go there needy. Your prospect has no power to reject you because you have no need. And again, last month I spoke about this stuff. Only people who are needy get rejected. If you have no need, you can't be rejected. Never have a need to be liked, to sound smart. You know those types? Oh man, I want to sound knowledgeable, I want to sound smart. Danger. Danger, 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 because it puts you in a needy position. Just be relaxed, be calm. Don't have a need to be liked. Never have a need to sound smart or self-important. Focus on being effective and business-like. Be a business person. Just be a business person. Okay, focus on business. Don't try to be all, I'm so smart, listen to me. Trying to compromise too much is a sign of neediness. Rushing to close is a sign of neediness. When they see their own need, they'll rush to close. When they see their own need, they will rush to close. So you want to create need on their side so that they are the ones who are actually desperate to close the deal, not you. And I'm not kidding you here, because we've been trained to believe that prospects cannot close the sale. They will close the sale if they see that what you have is addressing their big need, which you would have helped them discover, of course, which I'm going to show you just now. So, next thing I'm going to show you is what I call the process. How do we make it happen? How do we tie all of this stuff together? So I'm going to start before the meeting. What happens before you go to the meeting? Again, if you remember, earlier this year, I did something called Natural Selling Series. I would encourage you to go back. I mean, look, if you like my way of selling, I would really encourage you to go back to those videos, watch them again, because this topic kind of ties in, it actually ties in perfectly with those videos. So whatever I leave out here is actually, it's because it's in those videos. So this is basically additional information to what I already taught you in the Natural Selling Series. So I really, really want to urge you to go back and learn watch those videos again, because they'll enhance your knowledge. So let's go back to before the sale. Before the sale, there's four things that are very important. The first thing is you need to have a mission. Why are we going there? Because sometimes we don't think about this. We think, oh, I've got another sales meeting. Let me go. No. Think. This is your checklist before the meeting. What is our mission for this meeting? Because sometimes it's a third meeting. You're meeting a different group. Your mission may be different to the first time. I know you're thinking, or most people are thinking, my mission is to go close the sale. If you remember, again, last month I said to you, you can't control results, but you can control your behavior. So mission must be based on behavior, not on result. To close the sale, how do you close the sale? Because closing the sale is not in your field. It's a decision they have to make. You know, you can't just go, let's run with this closing the sale business. Could you go to a meeting and say, hey, look, client, here's what I have. I've got this. It's going to do that for you. Guess what? I'm closing the sale. You can't. You don't close the sale. They make a decision based on their vision. Remember, no vision, no decision. So you can't have a mission to go close a deal or close a sale, because it's not in your, it's in their court. Yours is to help them see and decide that you are the help they need. Your vision can change, of course. This is just an example, by the way. When I say to help them see and decide that you are the help they need, it's a very simplified way. You could have your own vision. Ask yourself, what is your vision? You're going there to help them see and make a decision on something. But you're not going there to close a sale, because it's not valid. You don't close a sale. They decide based on your assistance. The second thing is a script. You need to be clear what it is you're going to say there. There's nothing worse than an unprepared person going to a meeting. So prepare yourself. Line up your points that you want to cover, you know, and practice. Practice presenting your points, and practice your questions as well that you're going to cover. Have a list of questions to uncover pain and help them, that are going to help them create a vision. So your questions, and I'll show you right now. And you need to have an agenda. You need to have an agenda. An agenda is not a mission, by the way. I'll explain that to you. Let's move forward. So I've got a checklist here for you for a meeting. So before you go to a meeting, you need to do this checklist quickly. Do I have an agenda? Does my agenda give them a right to veto? Remember, I said you must give them a right to say no. And I'll explain each of these things in detail. Next, do you have a plan to uncover their pain and their vision? Do you have a plan to agitate and nurture them? Nurture as in take care of them. You know, nurture, you know what that means. Agitate and nurture, or agitate in a nurturing way. Do you know how to uncover urgency Do you know how you're going to uncover their budget? Do you know how you're going to uncover their decision process? Do you know how you're going to get them? You're going to carry out a collaborative vision creation. Do you know how you're going to end the meeting, what I call the next step? Let's go through each of these things in detail. It sounds like a lot, right? But guess what? These things can happen in 10 minutes in a meeting, 15 minutes in a meeting, literally. Literally, believe it or not. Yeah, let's go. You'll see how easy all of this is. Agenda. What is an agenda? I've got an example here for you. You go to a meeting with Mary. After the small talk, hi, how are you, blah, 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 traffic, weather, whatever you say, really. You say, Mary, I'm not sure if what I have in mind, because you asked for the meeting. They don't know why you're here, probably. Or whatever. You say, Mary, I'm not sure if what I have in mind or what I want to show you is something that can help you. No, nobody says that. Like, you know, because usually when you go to a meeting, you're like, yeah, I've got something here for you. If you see this, wow, you're going to love this. No, you relax. You say, look, I'm not sure if what I have in mind or what I want to show you is something that can help you. And I want to say this to you, Mary. If you find that it doesn't help you, please feel free to say no. Is that fair? Wow. What have you done here? You've said to Mary, Mary, I'm not here to drum this thing into your head, to beat this deal into your head. I'm here to show you something. I think it will work for you. If it works, great. Let's do business. If it doesn't, hey, Mary, it's okay. Hey man, you're cool, you relax, no stress. Mary now, she breathes a sigh of relief because the last guy who was here this morning was just pushing and pushing and pushing. Buy my things, buy my stuff, buy this, you know. So Mary now is relaxing, like, wow, breath of fresh air. I really want to see this thing. And then you say, before I go into it, do you mind if I ask you a few questions? Of course, Mary doesn't mind. She's going to say, no, of course, you know. Go ahead, Paul. And then you go ahead. So when you give people a right to veto, a right to say no, you make them relax. They know you are not some pushy salesperson trying to force them to buy stuff they don't need. Remember, now that you've asked her if you can ask questions, all questions must be asked in a nurturing way. You don't want to be obnoxious. You don't want to be a prick. I know that there are no pricks in this program, but I'm just saying, you know, be nurturing, be kind, and be caring. So, you know, ask in a nurturing way. Now, that was our agenda. I know you were wondering, what is the agenda? That's it. You've done the agenda. You've laid the cards on the table. Mary, all right, but I have. It's something that can help you. But you know what, Mary? No worries, because if you don't think it can help you, just say no. Is that okay? Is that fair? Wow, Mary thinks that is fair, of course. And then you ask for the permission to ask a few questions. Mary says, sure. Now let's uncover the pain. Here's a question. I use this question every single time. In every meeting, I could be meeting the CEO, the chairman. In fact, it works even better when I'm talking to the most senior people in the company. I say, or maybe this is not exactly the way I use it, but this is pretty much it. I think 80% of it I haven't changed. If we were here a year from now, what would have had to happen between now and then for you to feel totally thrilled by the progress of this department? Let me read it again. If we were here, like here in this boardroom, if we were here a year from now, what would have had happened between today and then, that is a year from now, for you to feel totally thrilled with the progress of this department or company? What would ever happen? It's an open question. No pressure. It's not intimidating. They sit back. They start sitting back and smiling, saying, they start dreaming now about the future. Jeez, in future, what would be great? You know, they start thinking about all the good things that could happen or that would have to happen for them to really be thrilled. You know, can you see now? You know, you could use the word happy if you don't want to use thrilled, but you could tailor this question whichever way you like. But it's all about them imagining the future. You want them to imagine the future. But here's what you are looking for. This question helps them discover their own vision, because in their imagination, they start thinking about a lot of things and start living in the future, how great it could be. Imagine, you know, imagine. As you listen, as you, that is you, as you listen, look for needs that can be emotional or painfully urgent, existing or future agony. So as don't just also when they talk, don't also daydream with them. Listen. Pay attention to what they're saying. Pay attention to all the things they say they want. What you're listening for is, in order for that future to happen, there are things that will have to be in place. And those are the things you can supply them with. Because remember, when a company buys from you, when somebody buys from you, they buy because they want a future that is better than the present. That's it. They want a future that is better than the present. So when you push them to the future, you want them to dream and to tell you what that future looks like, so that in that process you can uncover the resources they will need in order for that future to take place, to happen. See? Then in the process you engage, you say, hey, you know, I picked up, you mentioned this, and then you start probing on specific things so that you can reveal to yourself and to them why there are certain pains here that need attention. Otherwise, that future may not be possible. Of course, you don't say that. So, after you've listened, you've uncovered their pain and their vision. Now, what do? You agitate. Agitate their pain in a nurturing way. You nurture them, and while you're agitating the pain. So, be nurturing and compliment their vision. Say something nice. Wow. You know, compliment their vision that they have for the future. Say something nice, complimentary. Focus on the potentially painful needs. So after you compliment the future, come back to today. Because now that future is still a dream at this stage. Come back to reality now. Bring them back to reality of their current needs in order for that dream to be a reality. In a kind of nurturing way, put a spotlight on it, that is the pain, and magnify these potential pains. Make these potential pains, put a spotlight on them and make them bigger so they could see that there's an urgent need for a decision here. A decision that is in their best interest. Remember, this is not about you and what you have to sell. It's about what they need and how you can help them. So you say to them, it sounds to me like you will need to make sure that ABC, DEF, and XYZ are taken care of before Vision G is achieved. It sounds to me like these things will need to be taken care of before that becomes a reality. Usually they'll say, sure, no, you're right. You know, we definitely have to work hard in these areas, whatever. You know, then ask, so who do you have in your corner helping you ensure that the XYZ situation is taken care of? Who do you have in your corner? They may have a supplier. I know you're thinking, what if they tell me that they have another supplier? Don't worry, because when you were listening to their needs, to their vision, you didn't only identify one thing, you identified a number of things. And you know the strength of your company. So you say, do they do this? Does your supplier do this? So you want to take them on a journey of what they can get by working with you. You know, at this stage, you just ask them a question about their vision, and already you are gaining a lot of information. You haven't even opened your presentation yet. They're already giving you all the things you need so that when you finally present a solution, you've got all the facts, you've got all the, you know, you take care of all the objections in advance. The problem with presenting in advance, the danger of just coming to a place and presenting, is that it's very pushy and it creates objections, you see. But when you ask questions, they give you their concerns and their vision and their pain on a silver platter. You know, so when you bring a solution, you are responding to something they already told you. So there's no resistance. But if you just present, they're always looking for an objection they could throw at you because they don't want to be sold, you see. They want to buy. Now, the next thing, after you ask them about who they have in their corner and you go further down the line with that, trying to see whether these things are already covered for them and how you can help them, you know, you don't even talk about yourself. You just want to, at this stage, you're just inquiring. So the next thing is you want to uncover urgency. Because it's pointless, you know, for them to have a need and all of that if they think, this thing can wait till next year. So you want to uncover urgency. So you say, Sviso, based on what you have told me, would I be mistaken if I said that time is of the essence in fixing the XYZ situation? Would I be mistaken? Would I be mistaken if I said time is of essence in fixing the XYZ situation? Can you see how that question is phrased? Would I be mistaken? You're kind of reversing it. You know, they may say, no, you're right. You know what I mean? Or it's unlikely they'll say, yes, you are mistaken. In all probability, they'll say, no, you are spot on. Time is of essence. You now know that there's urgency. So you ask another question, you know. When you say time is of essence, what time frame are we talking? I mean, when would you like to see this, that in place? I mean, what are we talking here? A month, a year, 6 months? What is it? You know, then you get a real answer of what it is that he means by time. Now, the next thing you want to know, do they have money? You want to uncover the budget. So you say, Sviso, would you mind if we talk about money for a minute? Would you mind if we talk about money? Or would you mind if we talk about money for a minute? Then he responds, no, sure, go ahead. Or if he's a bit arrogant, you know, some of the people we meet in this meeting, they'll say, what about money? That's the question, right? What about money? It's a question. So you need to answer it. Yeah. And then you answer it with these words. Assuming for a moment that we can help you, you are here to help, remember, not here to sell your stuff. Assuming for a moment that we can help you with XYZ, with the XYZ situation, are you currently budgeted for it? It's an innocent question, right? Hey, I budgeted for it. Assuming we can help. Yeah, it's a sneaky question that didn't work all the time. The next one, can you see how easy this is, guys? The next question, you haven't even presented, they're giving you all this info, silver platter. You need to uncover the decision-making process. So you say, what's your procurement process when it comes to purchasing whatever it is, whatever service, of course, you are there to sell. Well, what's your procurement process when it comes to purchasing whatever? Training, this, that, you know. Are there other people involved in the decision process, or is it just you? Can you see where we are going? This is like the first 10 minutes of a meeting. Obviously, depending on how long they took. That question about a vision, people get really excited. Sometimes a prospect can talk for 15 minutes about their vision. So, but they do most of the talking. You ask the questions, you listen, you make notes. Okay? So assuming that they didn't take 15 or 20 or 30 minutes trying to tell you their vision, getting all excited about where they would be a year from now, blah, 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 chances are now we are like 10 minutes. You haven't even presented, but you've got so much information that they've been just giving to you. Now, they even tell you whether they are the decision maker or someone else. How many times do you present and at the end of the meeting they say, oh, thanks for presenting. I'll talk to my boss about it. Now you know this information in advance, which gives you an advantage. Now you can find a way to work with it. The next step, with now you've got all the information, you do what I call collaborative vision creation. Remember, no vision, no decision. We want to get them to a decision now. So we want to consolidate their vision so that a decision is made. Now, explain to him how you can assist him and focus on benefits he will get as a result of your help. Some people call this a presentation. But I wouldn't, you know, focus on them. You know, just know you have your presentation, know it by heart, but really focus on them and the benefits that they will get. You know what I mean? Features are great, but focus on the benefits that they will get. Get involved in the discussion and ask him questions. You know, for each benefit, ask some kind of a question so that he agrees with you, or he says, yeah, but I think if it can be done in this way and that way, I think that would help us even more. Can you see where I'm going with this? Get them involved. Don't just talk in a monologue way for 25, 30 minutes before, you know, they can have a chance to say a word. Have a conversation. This is a discussion. You are equal colleagues here, man. It's not about you. It's about them, remember? Then conclude by summing up that you can do ABC for them by this date and at this price. Then ask. Here's another killer. You say, basically you conclude to them that, look, this is what we can do for you. We can do ABC for you, and we can do this. We can really get moving on this by this date, and this is what it would cost, you know, for this to happen. Then ask, so what would you like to do? What would you like to do, Mr. Zuma? And then shut up. And then you shut up. A lot of people make a mistake because they want to talk and explain, you know, the price and, you know, and offer discounts and all of that. So you ask, what would you like to do, Mr. Zuma? You're not closing. You are just asking for a decision. What would you like to do? Tells you. And you shut up. If shutting up takes 2 minutes, don't talk. You've asked a question. What would you like to do? Shut up. Be comfortable with silence. Nobody wants silence. The last person, if you ask a question, the next person to talk must be the person giving an answer to your question. So if it takes 5 minutes, Mr. Zuma is sitting there, chewing on his pen, wondering what to do, shut up. Sit still. Fold your arms. Shut up. Don't talk. If he says, yes, he wants the deal, what do you do? Do you jump off the chair, get all excited, saying, yes, Mr. Zuma, thank you so much. Thank you. I can kiss you now. No, you don't. This is what you say. Oh, Mr. Zuma, I appreciate that we are doing business, and I thank you for the order. You are comfortable with this decision, correct? What are you doing? You're giving him another chance to back out of the deal. Are you crazy? I know you're probably thinking, Sia, are you insane? He just said, yes, I'm taking the deal, I'm running. No. Because you don't want tomorrow someone to call to say, we've thought about it. Ask him if he's sure. Be calm. Don't be needy. Remember? Be relaxed. Be calm. You say, Mr. Zuma, I appreciate that we're doing business, and I thank you for the order. You're comfortable with this decision, correct? He responds, yes, yes, I am. Because if you have any second thoughts or uncomfortable, I would appreciate that we discuss it now. It's still okay to say no or change your mind. Guess what? You're giving him a chance to back out now. Why are you doing this? Because you don't want to deal with it, with a buyer's remorse tomorrow or next week. When someone calls, you're giving him a chance to now rethink again. You want to solidify this decision and confirm it. And I promise you, you're not going to lose the deal. I know you're thinking, what if he changes his mind? He won't. If anything, he'll be embarrassed to change his mind tomorrow. So what you're doing, you're nailing the deal down. You know, and then he responds, he says, when I make a commitment, I keep it. I'm a man of my word. Some people will say, I'm a man of my word. If I make a commitment, I keep it. Those words are gold, because he's not going to come back tomorrow. He'll be too embarrassed to even come back. Even if he changes his mind, he's going to want to make this deal happen, because he committed himself with passion. I'm a man of my word. If I make a decision, I keep it. If I make a commitment, I keep it. Now, that's when now you then discuss the next step. Oh, okay, great. No, thank you. Of course, Mr. Zuma, I know you're a man of your word, but I just didn't want you to feel pressured in any way. I know you are. I just didn't want you to feel pressured in any way. I don't think it would be fair to you. So now that we're doing the deal, Mr. Zuma, to make it easy, I even brought the contract. It's here. I think let's put it to paper, so that on this date I can deliver this, blah blah blah, you know, and pull out the contract. If it has to be another meeting, you know, whatever the decision is, this next step, all it does, it helps you. If, let's say, the decision is not made and you're going to have to come back to meet other people, or he wants to talk to whoever, make sure that there's an agreement. If he says, call me next week, you say, when next week? Which day? Monday, Tuesday? When exactly? On this day, what time? At this time, which line? Should I call you on your office, or should I call you on your cell phone? If I can't get hold of you on the phone, what would you prefer? Should I email you? Should I follow up until I get hold of you? Whatever. If they'll call you, find out who's going to make the call, which day they're going to make the call, roughly what time, but get the details, write every single detail down. This next step is crucial. Because sometimes people walk out of meetings without a commitment of what's happening next. Then they run around chasing the person for 3 weeks because there was no commitment. You know, you want them to commit, and you want them to know that you take your appointments seriously. So, after the decision is made, whatever the decision, please agree on all the details of the next step. Next meeting, phone call, delivery, contract, email, where, when, by whom, etc. All of that stuff must be agreed on, detailed. Write it down. Before you leave, confirm what you've written down. So, okay, let me just confirm what I've written down, Mr. Zuma, what we've agreed on. We've agreed on that I will give you a call on Monday at about 12 o'clock, and I'll call you in your office. If I don't get hold of you, I'll try you on your cell. If that doesn't work, I'll drop you an email, but I'm welcome to call you through the to keep calling until I get hold of you, or you will come back to me, whatever the case, whatever you agree on, read it back to him and agree, and he nods and says, oh, okay, great, you stand up and shake hands, you know, now you've got an agreement. I think that's it, guys. That's it. The meeting is ending, you're shaking hands, you're walking away, that's it. If you've got questions, you know what to do, drop me an email, give me a call. Get hold of me somehow, and let's address your questions. But I'm hoping that I've helped you. I'm hoping that I'm making this daunting and scary thing called selling, I hope I'm making it easier for you. I'm not going to lie. The old model, the pushy-pushy, close-close, all of that stuff, hey, it just never worked for me. And maybe you're a better salesperson than me. If it works for you, continue using it. If my model helps you, hey, call me, let me help you even more. Let's look at how you want to use it in your company, in your own script, and let me help you. So, and I just want to say thank you for this month's episode. Look forward to engaging with you, of course, as usual. Yeah, you can use this as your guide. You know, listen to this episode as many times as you can. Use it as a teaching tool, as a training tool, for your salespeople. And even when you're preparing for meetings, you know, just pop in and listen to this stuff, and just make sure you've crossed your T's and dotted your I's. Even after a meeting, to review what you've done, just use this, you know, just as a review to check if where you may have gone wrong in the meeting, etc., etc. But most importantly, learn to master this stuff by heart. It will change your life. I mean, I don't sell. I don't feel like I sell anymore, man. I feel like I just do business with people, and people are happy. They're thankful that I came. Oh, my word. Thank you so much. Really needed this help. So all I want to say is it's now yours. Own it. Make it happen. Go close if you want to close, or go do business and do big deals and make it happen. Grow your business. So, all right, that's it, guys. I think for this month, I'm leaving it here, and then I'll be hearing from you, and then we'll have our call-in sessions on Fridays. Whenever you want to talk to me, drop me emails, as I said. Let's leave it there. Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.